the two big parties at the moment are so far ahead, they're dug in so many constituencies that it's hard to see that, you know, totally changing. I do agree with what Mike Nesbitt was saying there, that in terms of the you know, his view that there could be a change in the electorate. We ran a couple of polls in, with our online opinion panel, which is about 5,000-6,000 members in December, and I've never seen a response like it before. I mean, it's been absolutely phenomenal. We've had people joining our opinion panel without us even marketing our opinion panel to join. People are annoyed about this issue. They want to have their say. They've all sorts of views, but they are certainly this, as I think Mr. McGuinness said, the straw that broke the camel's back. As far as polling and getting people's opinions are concerned, certainly it has been that. So that is that. I think that's filtered into Sinn Féin as well. Sinn Féin were a little bit more conciliatory, in my humble opinion, before Christmas. They certainly now are getting a feedback through from their electorate that they're annoyed about this issue, that they're engaged with, that they want these institutions to work, obviously with the aspiration towards a united Ireland, but they still want these institutions to work. And that could have led to the policies that we see unfolding now with
Sinn Féin.
What about
the loss of 18 MLAs? Who's going to be worst affected?
That is crucial. That's a very good point. Dropping down from 6 to 5, I mean, it's been said by your experts before, and you don't need me to tell you, that that favours the bigger parties. It favours parties with bigger machines. It favours parties that can get out and knock the doors and get their case across. Taking into account, if you're looking at it now, quota was going to be, is going to be around 6,500. We have a rule, and it's been quite a key rule in any election. You need to get half a quota in the first count or be in the top six, as it was last May. This time you need to get half a quota in the first count or be in the top five, or else your chances of being elected as an MLA, and prospective candidates out here should maybe note this, your chances of being elected is less than 2%. I mean, you do need to get 3,000 to 3,500 first preference votes. That favours the big parties, people who can go round enough doors, get their message across, and who has got the big established machines? Sinn Féin and the DUP. That's not to say there's another factor that Mike mentioned about the non-voters there, and it's a key point to mention from last year. We had the Northern Ireland Assembly election. We had a little event after that, 7 weeks later, you may remember the EU referendum. Mm-hmm. There's 110,000 people in Northern Ireland came out and voted in the EU referendum who didn't vote in the Northern Ireland Assembly election. Who are those people?
Yeah, try and get them motivated. And they could be is a crucial thing. Let's bring Nicholas White in now.
Sure,
he's an election expert. We in BBC Northern Ireland News for election day coverage. Nicholas, would you go along with what Bill's been saying there?
Yes, very largely. I think the one thing that's going to make a very big difference is going to be the cut in the number of MLAs from 6 seats to 5. That is going to mean essentially, you know, 20% fewer seats for each of the political parties to fight for, and I think that's going to exacerbate internal tensions within the parties as the seats become more scarce, and you're going to see some quite serious succession struggles in a lot of areas where people might have run two candidates before. It may make sense for them to run only one.
Four names that have been mentioned who could go: Alex Atwood, Peter Weir for the DUP, Claire Sugden, maybe Eamon McCann, obviously a colourful figure up at Stormont. I mean, these people could lose their seats, couldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, one hesitates to nail one's colours to the mast on any of these predictions, but certainly it's no more than the truth that Alex Atwood sneaked in on the last count in with some difficulty this year, and it's certainly the case also that all of the others who you mentioned were towards the end of the ballot paper, or towards the end of the count. Eamon McCann, likewise, if you're the only representative of your party in a constituency, then it becomes that much more difficult to get transfers, which is the case of both Eamon McCann for profit.
Bill, polling companies have taken a lot of flack in the bigger picture when it comes to things like Trump and Brexit and all the rest of it, and everyone being surprised considering what the polling companies have said before. How accurate are we in Northern Ireland when it comes to predicting things?
Well, obviously you should ask somebody neutral on that, maybe, looking at, but I would say we're fairly accurate. I mean, the Northern Ireland Assembly election, I have to say, we would give ourselves a pass on that. We did overestimate the UUP vote. We did put some corrections into our models, our online polling models that we use for the EU referendum, and we predicted that to within 1%. So we were very, very 3 days before the referendum on the 20th of June, and that was published on that day. The referendum day was 23rd of June, of course. I would say, just, I don't want to go off on a tangent here, but the EU EU referendum polling actually was one of the most accurate polling performances has ever been. The online polling predicted 51-52% Brexit for 2 to 3 weeks before the referendum. That just didn't filter into the atmosphere of the overall media, including the BBC. There were warning signs in the US election. Again, our Twitter feed and Lucid Talk, I put up a post 12 days before the US election saying Trump is well in line to winning this election. It's a copy of a report from the States. It wasn't my opinion.
Okay, so I don't want to go... Defending your corner, fair enough. Yeah, so I just want to bring Nicholas in again. Okay. What about Arlene Foster's standing? Has she been damaged electorally by this as an individual politician and a leader of the party, would you say, Nicholas?
It is extraordinary to see open dissent within the Democratic Unionist Party. This is not a party that is known for its lack of unity on anything. And we'll have to see whether this develops into can develop in three possible ways. It could be that the dissenters are squashed and the DUP candidates turn out to be loyalists to Arlene Foster. It could be that we have an election where there is an openly divided DUP, with some people being loyal to the current leadership and some calling for a change of style. And it could be that we actually see a formal split and a new party set up from scratch. That last attack is a very, very risky one. It's very rare for a political party to get anywhere when it started only 6 weeks before the election, which is what we're talking about here. But it's not at all unprecedented. I mean, here in Europe, we look at Slovenia, where the current prime minister literally founded his own party 2 months before the election and then took power. So it's not impossible.
Yeah. And old Beppe Grillo in Italy made a pretty quick impact too. Thank you both very much indeed for your analysis so far.